back to another installment of the Uninformed Gamers Podcast. I am back. You know me. You love me. This is Darkness Tiger, also known as Devin. It's so good to be back. I missed you guys last week. But joining me this week is my friend, my confidant, and the best reviewer in the country of India, Rad James Review. Also,
sorry. That was actually pretty good. Rad James here from Rad James Review, and I don't know how it happened, but apparently my review over RRR has gotten over 10,000 views on YouTube and over, I think, like 100 likes.
That is so funny.
Like, I don't know how this video went semi-viral, in a way, at least for me. Like, that's my version of viral, but at least for me.
I feel like since that was a movie that like probably people in the States never heard of, when they found like an American reviewer reviewing it, it was just like, hey, check out this guy.
Yeah, dude, the response was nutty. And like after like people were very nice and cordial about like the corrections that I needed to make, like it was fine. A lot of the comments were from like native Indian folk, and they didn't like the movies being referred to as like Bollywood or Tollywood or just any of the woods attached. I found out that they much prefer Indian films to be called just Indian language cinema.
Okay, I like that.
And that's it, because it doesn't like segregate anybody.
Stereotype,
because there's so many different languages in India. So I thought that was interesting, and there were, you know, most of the comments were pretty nice about it. So, but yeah, other than that brief tangent, what have you been up to?
Oh, I've not been up to much, but let's mention that unfortunately Chris will not be joining us this episode. He had other obligations, so feel free to check out his Twitter account at iChameleon if you wish to follow him. He will be back hopefully next week, where we'll all hopefully be in the studio.
Yes, definitely.
Going back to your review of RRR, did I tell you that I ended up watching it?
Yeah, you said didn't you watch it on a flight or something?
Yeah, I watched it on a flight, and I watched it based off your recommendation.
Yeah, and yeah.
I'm not going to lie to you, Mason, I had to watch it in a few parts. I think I watched it in
I remember you saying that you had to break it up, but in my opinion, that movie is better when you do it like that.
Oh yeah.
Because how it's filmed is it's even broken up in episodes, which I thought was really cool. Yep. They definitely borrowed that sort of style from like Quentin Tarantino in terms of how he likes to break up his movies in like episodic format.
Yeah, and I think that if you have a movie that's about 3 hours long, you're going to get into an aspect where it's going to start feeling like a different story, because as you transition to a different story. And by those having those little pause breaks, it was like, okay, I can stop here. I can think about what I just watched, and then I can come back tomorrow to keep watching.
Yeah, exactly. And so how I did it is I kind of watched it very similarly to the Netflix movie with Robert De Niro, the gangster film about unions. What was that called?
I do not know that one.
Oh gosh, it was like 3 hours long. Oh god, no, I can't.
The Irishman.
Yeah, The Irishman. Not to be confused with Kill the Irishman.
Yeah, that's a completely different movie.
Yeah, very very different movie. Fun fact. Actually, another brief tangent, folks. You get them here at the Uninformed Gamers Podcast. My grandfather was a police officer for the Cleveland Police Department. And when he was serving under the force, he was a part of a secret task force to bring down Danny Green.
Wow, really?
Yes. However, it was a sting operation that he was a part of, that he was organizing, and Danny Green caught wind of it, so unfortunately it did fall through, but it's such a really cool fact and a really cool piece of history that I'm really proud of with my grandpa, know, he was a very good police officer. He's a good soldier in the military. You know, he was one of the good ones. Right. You know. So, that's a little fun fact.
No, that's epic. Thanks for telling us that tale. But going back to what I've been getting into.
Yes.
As all the listeners know, whenever I travel, I don't have a whole lot of time to really video game, but I have been obviously playing a little bit of Forza Horizon 5 just so I can do their like weekly events. Been mm-hmm. playing my Formula One just so I can get through the practice sessions. And I've gone back to Yakuza 5.
Nice.
Yep. You know, I guess I enjoy the story more than I care for the fighting.
Gotcha. Yeah, I've kind of heard that from a lot of people who play Yakuza. They much prefer like the story aspect.
Yeah, the stories are super long. And my apologies, I meant Yakuza like a dragon. The stories are very long.
I assumed that's what you meant.
Yeah, yeah. The stories are very long. And they're just beautifully told stories. And I think that's the reason why you play. Like every time I mm-hmm. play the Yakuza Zero. I would say, okay, after this cutscene, I'm going to go to bed. The cutscene's 30 minutes.
Oh, geez. That's like Metal Gear Solid cutscene right there.
Literally a Metal Gear Solid cutscene. So
I will say, though, I like them.
Oh, no, I really appreciate video games as basically movies and TV shows.
Yeah, like, that's the thing about MGS or, like, other games with, like, long cutscenes. It feels like you're playing a movie.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And as we're saying with Unreal Engine 5, that'll be sooner than we think.
Oh my goodness. Those like gameplay videos or like showcase videos of the Unreal Engine. Oh my goodness, they are amazing.
I think that's my favorite part of like my day when I see a new Unreal Engine 5 showcase video coming out.
Mhm.
Cuz they look so realistic. They look
insane.
But as you and I both know, none of these games are ever going to look like that.
Oh, no. It's just, they're mainly used to, like, flex the software.
Exactly. It's more just a showcase and showpiece. But, Mason, what's been going on your end?
Actually, a fair amount in terms of the gaming side of things. Mr. Chameleon and I both downloaded and started to play Genshin Impact together.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So that was really fun. I got to see the chameleon in the wild. I went and visited him at his new place, saw the baby, hung out. He showed me Skinwalker Ranch.
He's trying to get you into that too, huh?
Yeah, no. I watched the first episode with him, and I was intrigued.
Yeah, it's intriguing for like 3 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And then the problem is nothing ever like happens.
Happens, yeah. That's what he was saying too. It's just like the people that hired this dude to like do the experiments are just like, you can't do this because of reasons.
Literally that.
I'm like, dude, you're paying this highly intelligent individual to conduct an experiment, but yet you're preventing him from doing everything that he can for said experiment.
Exactly. Like,
what's the benefit in paying him, which I'm going to assume an exorbitant amount of money?
Right? Because the guy, he like owns a bank in like Utah, and I'm like, why do you care?
Yeah, like, and my whole thing too is just like, why the fuck did that billionaire buy the ranch? Like, what's the purpose? Was he just that curious?
Yeah, that's why I'm like, don't get us wrong, people. Skinwalker Ranch is entertaining,
and you yeah, for sure,
more interest than two skeptics. But it leaves a lot of questions that have to be asked.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A lot of questions, not a lot of answers.
Right.
So we checked that out. Played Genshin for about, it was like 3 hours or so. We're trying to get like to level 16 because that's when multiplayer starts.
Okay, nice.
Or at least that's when it unlocks.
Why does multiplayer unlock at level 16?
It's just, I don't know. That's one of the things for the game, I guess.
All right.
I wouldn't be able to tell you why, but
that just seems like strange that wouldn't be like a automatically available thing.
Yeah, they make you play the game on your own, like solo, for the first 16 levels. Then you have the option to do co-op.
Gotcha.
But it doesn't take that long to get level 16. Like, you know, like I said, we played for 3 hours, and we made it to, like, pretty much level 10 already.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not too bad. So I imagine in our next session when we play, we'll reach that level and then start to be able to, like, play with one another.
Mm-hmm.
Not, like, separately, you know? And then I've just been playing more Vampire Survive.
Now, are you still enjoying it?
Yeah, I'm, like, 6.5 hours in.
All right now.
It's very fun. It's challenging. I've unlocked a lot of characters so far. I didn't know that there was going to be so many characters.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a nice, like, experiment type of game, because in order to unlock characters, you have to, you know, do certain things.
Yeah.
So I'm very, very happy about that aspect, where it's, like, random in a way.
I know when I was at Chris's house last, he actually had me try the Fall Guys for the first time.
Yeah, yeah. How'd you like it?
It was fun. It's Mario Party.
Yeah, yeah. It's basically, it's like a more, this is going to sound bad, but it's like a more toxic version of Mario Party.
That does sound bad, because the first thing I did when I started my first round is I grabbed somebody just to make sure they would.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. It's like bringing trolling to a new level.
Oh, yeah. So I played that one round, and I was like, all right, I see the enjoyment out of this, but my backlog is too big to ever get to this. So it's
yeah, fun. Yeah. I treat Fall Guys like almost Fortnite in a way.
Yeah, same difference. But I heard that you finally watched a movie that I recommended called.
Yes. If you want, I can save that till our review section.
Let's save it to the review segment. So while we're here, let's get into our very first topic.
Yes.
It's a
doozy.
Do you want to take this one lead? This one is a doozy.
Yeah, I mean, I can start us off and then we can just kind of like go in on it together.
Absolutely.
So we talk about trading card games quite a bit on this podcast. We've discussed Magic the Gathering. We've discussed Yu-Gi-Oh!, Pokemon, the Digimon card game, because I like to play that competitively. And then mm-hmm. we've touched on other card games such as like Flesh and Blood.
Mm-hmm.
But we haven't really touched on any others. And the reason why I bring up trading cards is because a big company, arguably one of the bigger companies within the entire world, has decided to throw their hat in the proverbial trading card game ring. And the company that is doing so is none other than Disney.
And this is where my thoughts started kicking in.
Yes, so the game is called Lorcana, and it is set to release / ship in fall 2023. So, what are your thoughts? What are your kind of reactions to this?
My first thought, saying that it was Disney, I'm thinking, okay, Disney has been able to show over the last, I'll say the last 15 years. I'm not going to give you the full 20. I'll say in the last 15 years, basically anything Disney has touched, they've turned it into absolute gold and a complete money juggernaut.
Oh yeah, 100%.
100%. But then I remember that Disney in the gaming sphere has not always been the strongest or most reliable company.
Okay.
And then I thought, do people really flood to card games because of the name behind it, or do they flood to it because of the enjoyment out of it? Because there's been card games that have come and gone that were mm-hmm. supposed to be the quote-unquote next big thing, and they weren't. And if Disney's basically jumping in and saying, oh, we're going to have all these backers, we're gonna take the cards to them, that usually is a recipe for instant disaster. Because you kind of have to let the people come to you and let mm-hmm. them know you whether this is a community to be built around this.
Yeah.
I just don't think you can just buy your way, because they are buying their way. And
so what were you going to say?
I'm cautiously optimistic because I love the way this sounds.
Yeah.
But I don't have faith that it'll be as big as Disney's thinking.
Gotcha. So the one thing I'm going to play devil's advocate here.
Always can.
And because one thing I do disagree with what you said was that Disney hasn't had success in the gaming sphere, but I would argue that they have actually found success within the tabletop sphere, because they have had experience with strategy themed board games.
Right.
One of the biggest ones being Disney's Villainous. And what's more reassuring about this card game is it's being kind of helmed by this entity known as Ravensburger, who worked on the Disney Villainous. So I'm, like you did say, cautiously optimistic. I agree with that sentiment. I'm very cautious about this card game, especially now, because the card game market is very saturated right now.
Yep.
The biggest players obviously being Hasbro with Magic the Gathering, Bandai with Dragon Ball Super and the Digimon card game. We've got Flesh and Blood, and we have Konami, and we have, you know, the Pokemon company with the Pokemon trading card game, obviously. So those are like the biggest players right now. So that Disney really, really needs to bring their A game if they're going to try to take a piece of that pie, because this is a billion dollar industry. So,
and
they have their work cut out for them.
I think you just hit the nail on its head, is they really have to try because it's a billion dollar industry. If Disney knows that it has a property in its hands that could potentially be $1 billion, whether you're looking at Star Wars, Marvel, Pirates of the Caribbean, they will go full force in making sure they show you the best that they can show you.
Mm-hmm. And they do have so many intellectual properties that they can pull from for this card game.
And that's their whole plan and purpose, is because mm-hmm. they have so many intellectual properties, that's what they're going to attempt to do. Let's see here. The basic idea is that this place called the Great Illuminary, said brand mm-hmm. manager Ryan Miller, a veteran of Wizards of the Coast who helped design the gameplay, Disney Lurkana. It is a treasury of all Disney's songs and stories ever made, all the characters, and it's where they kind of recorded. The players take on this role of an Illumineer, this powerful source that has the ability to bring these characters to life off the page. Players will be bringing a band of their favorite Disney's characters together, adventure in the world. That just sounds like every childhood dream of mine.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
But again, I want success, but for some reason, I just don't see it, because I just don't think you can buy your way into this.
Mm-hmm. The one thing that gave me concern about the game itself is that the game, when it comes out, it won't be a competitive card game,
mm-hmm.
which I found to be very different and interesting, because in all of the successful card games at the top of the food chain, they are competitive. Like right. Magic the Gathering, the number one, is a competitive card game. Same with yep. all the others that I mentioned earlier. They are all competitive. However, the guy from Ravensburger has said on record that, you know, quote, Magic the Gathering, I would say, is very high competition level. People love that about it. However, we have pulled back from it. He also goes on to say that, I wouldn't say that we're cooperative in any sense. It's definitely a strategy card game, but I would say that we've pulled back from the confrontation level because we feel that that will appeal to more folks. So if you think of chess as the highest confrontation level you can get, we're just a bunch of notches behind that because we just want people to have fun with characters that they love.
I mean, that's something I can get behind.
Yeah, I mean, that is very interesting. So the barrier to entry, based on reading that, is going to be very low. At least I would argue it would be, you know?
Yeah, I can see that.
But, like, I am going to check this out when it releases. I will, because there's a lot of properties within Disney that I love. I mean, we've got Marvel, we've got Star Wars, we've got Kingdom Hearts, we've got anime, we've got basically every Disney movie. And there's a whole bunch of other shit that I'm probably missing off the top of my head, but there's a lot of stuff that they can pull from. And my whole thing is, if these cards have beautiful art, it's going to sell like hotcakes.
Oh, guaranteed. I guess we'll see in fall of 2023.
Yeah.
I guarantee it'll sell, but the question is, will it have staying power? We'll see.
Yes. Because that's the ultimate question, staying power. The ultimate
question is staying power. But a company that apparently does have staying power. And I don't know, Mason, I feel like we talk about this company.
We do. We need to do like we've talked about this privately, listeners, but we've been mulling around the idea of doing like themed episodes, right?
Yep.
I think it'd be decent to do a themed episode about this next company.
And the company that we are talking about is Tencent. Now, you might recognize that name from literally acquiring everything but Star Wars.
I refer to Tencent as the biggest company that you've never heard of.
And that's what we're going to, that's the title of that episode. We're going to do just an episode on them. That is going to be the title.
Because the biggest company you've never heard of.
Biggest company you've never heard of. And the reason we're talking about Tencent this week is because it wasn't just Tencent. It was also Sony.
Mm-hmm.
Sony and Tencent have bought over 30% of the Elden Ring developer From Software.
Which is huge.
Yes. This Sony now owns 14%, while Tencent owns 16%.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but however, the I guess the company's called Kadokawa.
Kadokawa
still owns almost 70%. From Software will aim to proactively invest in development of more powerful game IP for itself to strengthen From Software's development capabilities, and will seek to establish a framework that allows the expansion of the scope of its own publishing in a significantly growing global market. So now Sony owns Elden Ring.
Yep, more or less.
More or less. How do you feel about this?
I mean, I'm cautious about like the monopolistic aspect of this.
And we're not talking about from Sony. We're actually talking about Tencent. Like Sony, this seems fine.
Tencent's the concern, but I'm fine with Sony doing it. I don't really have any issues with that.
Yeah, same. Like, we always kind of like give Microsoft credit when they do an acquisition, but Sony doesn't do enough acquisitions to really give them credit. Mm. So this is one that kind of makes sense to me because of the Dark Souls. We kind of saw this one coming. But what we didn't see was a partnership between the two.
No, I didn't foresee that either. And what's interesting is Kadokawa is a huge player in the animation industry. I don't know if you knew that, but they handle a lot of properties that are, you know, on Crunchyroll, on Netflix. They have their hands in a lot of like anime movies as well. They're a big production company.
All right. Well, we'll keep our eye on them from going forward.
For sure.
I'm not sure because it's still just the 30%. I don't know if this will affect multi-platform games. I think there's probably too soon to tell. And this deal probably has to be approved. But we will see as we are going forward.
For sure.
Now, Mason, have you gone to the movies recently to see any animated films?
I have not, but I am hoping, fingers crossed, that I get out of work early tomorrow because the Chameleon and I are thinking about going to see Dragon Ball Super Superheroes.
Oh, wow. Did you guys hear the news about about Dragon Ball?
I did.
And what was the news? Congratulations. That
Yeah, 100%. I haven't seen the movie yet, so I can't comment on whether or not it's good, bad, whatever. But overall, the reception has been, it's been mixed. But based on the performance at the box office, the box office would beg to differ. Because guess what? Dragon Ball Super Super Heroes is now the number 5 highest grossing animated film in the U.S. box office history.
Congratulations, Dragon Ball.
Which is crazy. Yeah, big round of applause. I believe it's around $50 million plus it's earned.
Yep, right around there, yep.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yep, and do you want to know what the 4 movies are that are ahead of it?
I'm going to guess off the top of my head. All right, go for it. I saw the list briefly, but I know one. I think number 1 is Pokemon, the first movie.
Yep, that's number 1. At a lifetime gross of $85 million and an opening day of $31 million.
Then I will guess number 2, Spirited Away.
Nope, Spirited Away is not in the top 10.
Really? Interesting. Okay. Let's see. What else would it be then for anime films that are... I'm shocked that Spirited Away isn't there.
Nope, but I'll give you number 2.
Yeah, what's number 2?
Demon Slayer the movie.
Oh, I should have fucking knew that. When that movie came out, it broke so many fucking records.
I was surprised you couldn't guess that one.
Yeah, I saw that in theaters, too.
Yeah, I was going to give that hint, but I wasn't sure if you actually saw it.
Yeah, I saw it. It was very good to see in theaters.
Well, number 3. Take a guess at what number 3 is.
I don't know.
Pokemon the movie 2000.
Oh, okay, Pokemon 2000. I actually enjoyed the Pokemon 2000.
I actually enjoy most Pokemon movies.
Yeah, they're fun. You know, what's really hilarious about Pokemon the first movie is the title itself, right? Yeah, because they have the gall and the cojones to be like, you know, this is Pokemon the first movie because we know we're gonna make more.
But I do love the second movie was called just Pokemon the movie.
Yeah, and what's interesting too about like Pokemon the first, it's called Pokemon the first movie Mewtwo Strikes Back. So it almost seems like it's a sequel, but it's not a sequel.
Yeah, it's a prequel to Pokemon the movie, which is a prequel to Pokemon Third the movie.
Yeah, it's a little complicated.
Yep, and number 4 is going to go to Jujutsu Kaisen Zero, the movie.
Wow, that's amazing. So I'm seeing a lot of recency bias out of, 3 of these films. Like, well, Demon Slayer, Jujutsu Kaisen, Dragon Ball Super, Super Hero, all came out very recently.
But to be fair, if we're counting in the top 6, 3 of them did not, 3 of them did.
Yeah.
It's a hit or miss. Do you want to know where Spirited Away was on this list?
What?
It was 12th.
Wow. Interesting.
A lifetime gross of $10 million and an opening day weekend of less than $500,000.
That's sad.
Yeah, it was a commercial flop when it came out, but it did much better once it reached DVD.
Yeah. I first saw the movie at a community college.
Yeah, I saw it. I think I saw it online for the first time. Fantastic movie. Probably one of my top, easily in my top 5 animated movies.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite animated movie of all time is Princess Mononoke.
A very great one. Which reminds me, I have to give you a movie recommendation. But the problem is I have to find it first.
Because I
was reading one of these BuzzFeed articles, and I heard about this movie, and I figured it would be literally right up your alleyway.
Do you remember what it's called?
I can't remember what it's called, but as I'm talking to you, I'm actually just going down back to the article to see where it was.
I wonder if I've seen it.
And it apparently is on Netflix, so if you wish, you can stream it this evening. It has to do with bullying. It's called A Silent Voice.
I've seen that movie 3 times.
Was it good?
It's amazing.
All right, then
I would highly recommend it. It's very dramatic, very sad movie, but it's a well worth the watch. You actually might cry. Because, like, when I saw the film, I legitimately cried for the first time that I watched it.
Wow.
Because, like, not to get too deep, but, you know, when I was younger, I was a victim of bullying. So it really kind of hit me on a personal level.
I understand that. Well,
so maybe it's definitely worth a watch. Highly recommend if you've never seen A Silent Voice. It is a very, very good film.
Well, maybe I'll watch it and I'll give it the review segment next week and we can talk about it.
Yeah, the director who does it, he's done quite a bit of things, but Naoko Yamada, he's done quite a bit, but I'll just leave it at that before we move on to the next session.
All right, now speaking of watching something, before we hopped on the podcast, I actually asked you to watch a movie trailer.
Yes, you did.
And a little bit inside baseball for the listeners. As we're waiting to boot up, I can hear Mason's commentary on his viewing experience of a movie that just came out. And the movie trailer is called Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. Mason.
That's a whole assortment of words I never thought I would hear.
No, neither did I. But I will say, being an active participant in your commentary, you have a lot of opinions.
Yes, I do. So, backstory about this movie, actually. The copyright for Winnie the Pooh has expired. For those of you that do not know, within the United States, copyrights do have a shelf life?
You could say expiration date.
Expiration date. So, as a general rule, the copyright protection lasts for the entire life of that author, plus an additional 70 years, so quite some time. But as we all know, Winnie the Pooh is very old. To also put that into perspective, in a couple of years, the copyright for Mickey Mouse will expire.
And we're going to be saying Mickey Mouse Blood and Honey.
For real. All
right. But
getting back to the trailer. It actually, like, not going to lie, looked kind of good.
It's one of those movies that looks so bad, it might actually come out good. Because, let's be honest here, as I'm watching this trailer, after Christopher Robin has basically, this is what's in the trailer, this is no spoiler, we have not seen this movie.
No.
When Christopher Robin leaves, basically, Pooh and Piglet and the whole gang go crazy, okay?
Yeah.
He comes back years later to revisit his hometown, and basically everybody's become, like, mass serial killers.
Yep.
But I do appreciate, and I don't know why this thought popped in my head as I'm watching this trailer, but it did. I was like, I do appreciate that after Christopher Robin left, Pooh became a mechanic.
Yeah, right.
Like a very successful mechanic in Tennessee.
Yeah, right. Like he achieved his life goal.
He achieved his life goal of working under cars because he looked like a mechanic in a Winnie the Pooh mask.
He did. And like the trailer's so nutty. Like the first, like it pretty much opens on this girl getting her neck snapped. I'm like, holy shit.
Starting off strong, that's the blood. Like,
yeah, I'm like, God damn!
Yeah, it was very graphic.
Like, oh, it's a very graphic trailer. Rated R for sure.
Rated R for sure, but this is where I'm like, maybe we shouldn't let a copyright expire. But no, I think this is one where I think I'm going to wait for it to come on streaming.
Oh, yeah.
This doesn't seem like a movie I'm going to rush out to watch, but it does.
No. Interesting. It looks entertaining. I'll watch it for free.
I like that idea. Now, let's switch over to a different topic, a little bit of a somber one, a sad one. Every now and then, we have stories where a major company in the industry or a major platform in the industry unfortunately has to close its doors. We saw this with Mixer, and unfortunately today, we are seeing it with the Facebook gaming app. Pour one out for your Facebook gaming app homies.
Yeah, and I was actually kind of shocked that they shut down because, I frequent Facebook, and I see a lot of people streaming on there in terms of, like, video gaming, like, all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why, because as I'm the same way with you, I'll just be scrolling and I'll stop and just watch somebody stream just because I've got like 5 minutes to kill.
Yeah, like, and you know, the streaming folks that are on Facebook are relatively successful. I would argue, like, their numbers in terms of how many people tune in aren't that bad. Like,
Yeah, considering you have with Facebook, you have a built-in audience. Like with Twitch, I don't go to Twitch because I actually have to go to Twitch. But Facebook, oh, I can just stop and watch. TikTok, I can stop and watch.
It's just right there.
Yeah. Now, was there a reason as to why that it's being taken down? Because it's still doing a lot with the meta gaming sphere. It's doing a lot. So to have this being shut down, I don't really see anything for the reason.
Yeah, I don't either. Maybe they just want to reinvest into the other like gaming things that they have in the works, like all the VR shit and like the metaverse.
I mean, I don't blame them, but maybe Facebook came to the realization, maybe the streaming thing is not really bringing people to the platform, which now that I said that out loud, seems actually right. Are you signing up for a Facebook account to watch somebody stream?
No, I'm not.
I'm absolutely not. However, I will go on TikTok to watch somebody stream, or I will go on Twitch to watch somebody stream. Even when Mixer was around, like I could see like people playing and I would just hop in and hop out. Facebook gaming, I don't know how much revenue that's bringing in for you.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, I mean, Facebook gaming lasted longer than Mixer.
That is true, and Facebook gaming lasted longer than this next thing we're about to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I want to watch it anymore now.
I can tell you my impressions on the first 2 to 3 episodes. You can skip it. So what we're talking about is after a very long run of a single season, and I know this might come as a surprise to a lot of our listeners here, the Resident Evil TV series on Netflix has been canceled.
Gasp! I am so surprised.
Oh no, who could have possibly have guessed that this was going to happen when they hired a black guy to be Albert Wesker?
Yeah. Like, didn't we predict that it wouldn't last? I want to say
Yeah,
we did.
I think we did. I think you go back a couple episodes, probably like 4 or 5, maybe even 6. We made this prediction. This like I was like, I don't see this going past to a second season.
Yeah.
And apparently, neither did Netflix.
No.
Yeah, the problem was Netflix said that the show was in their top 10. However, it was never a strong top 10 for them. And for them to continue to invest money into it, it just did not seem worth it. So they were going to go ahead and cancel it. Now, what I learned from doing some research on this story was that Netflix was actually tying the advertisements to this after Stranger Things.
Really interesting. Okay.
So that way they would bring in a Stranger Things audience because, again, the main characters on the younger side,
Yeah.
still dealing with monsters and all those things.
I can
So
see that.
I guess even Netflix was like, well, we're going to need to put in a good movie buffer for this trailer. And so apparently it did not work out for them. But I think the reason it did not work out is, again, doing my reading and doing my research and checking people's comments, it just strayed too far away from the source material.
Yeah, I mean, basically, a similar story happened with Cowboy Bebop.
Yep.
And the live action rendition of that is it strayed far from the source material. It changed a lot, and a lot of fans just weren't happy with the changes.
Yeah, and we're not saying you can't make changes, 'cause I'm actually a firm
No,
believer
no.
you should. Because then you would just say, oh, I've already watched this in animated form. I think that you should make changes that make relevant sense to your potential audience.
Exactly. And unfortunately, Netflix has a bad history with live action anime adaptations.
Absolutely.
So, which brings me to a very small tangent
Go for it.
of they made a live action for Full Metal Alchemist. That got released on Netflix and it was god awful. Like, I could only watch maybe 15 minutes of it before shutting it off. But for some god damn reason, they decided to make a sequel and then a third one. So it's a trilogy for Full Metal Alchemist on Netflix. Not only that, the live-action Death Note, I wasn't a fan of. I thought that movie was garbage.
Wow.
Even from a strict film standpoint and not bringing in any anime or manga elements to my opinion, I still thought it was a garbage film. But that's just me. Right. I know it's a bit harsh, but and then the final thing I'll say is the One Piece live action just wrapped filming. So fingers crossed that it'll be good, but I doubt it.
Yeah, live action anime films are hit or miss, more miss than hit.
Mm-hmm. I will say though, the Japanese do make good live action anime films. I will say that.
But the problem is that here in the United States, we're trying to Americanize things,
mm-hmm. and it just doesn't work.
It doesn't work because the story doesn't work with it.
No.
You can't tell a Eastern story from a Western perspective, because then it's a Western story that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Speaking of which, random sidebar, while we're talking about film, did you see the movie Nope by Jordan Peele?
Dude, I want to so bad.
I did see it. I thoroughly enjoyed it. My friends hated it. But that's neither here nor there. Apparently, Jordan Peele is considering making Nope its own universe.
That'd be cool.
Doing another movie to kind of explain a little bit more what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So that was announced. I'm super excited. I actually thoroughly enjoyed Nope. I like the premise. I would absolutely see a sequel. I would sign up again. And Mason, if you want to go see Nope, I will happily join you to go see it.
Oh, nice. Because I do want to see it.
All right. So let's move over to our final main topic. And this is something that on this podcast, let's be honest here, we've kind of bashed this and basically said there's no real purpose for this to exist, which
I don't think. Like, is our take controversial? Is it a hot take? I don't think it is.
I don't think it is either. I think that we're pretty, outside of one thing that we talked about that guy hated, our opinions are pretty standard. And that's what we're talking about is The Last of Us remake. And I know, listeners, we have talked about this before. But it's finally in reviewers' hands. People have rated it. People have said, Mason, here's what they have said. They have said it's gorgeous. They have said it really makes use of the haptic feedback. They said that it helps tell a really great story. But the problem is it helps tell a really great story that was great 9 years ago.
Yeah.
I was surprised by this.
I was too.
I was expecting tens across the board, to be honest with you, because it's Last of Us.
Mm-hmm. I kind of was too, in a way.
Yeah, because when Dark Souls was remade, tens of tens across the board. If God of War got remade, it'd be a tens across the board.
Skyrim.
They did remake it and got tens across the board.
I know.
But this one of the reasons that they said that the story is from 2009, or from not 2009, but 9 years ago, was that because the story that The Last of Us told has been done better, has been done in different ways. And when you look back at it, this is just another generic The Road spinoff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the main character, Joel, in today's time, is a complete unnecessarily mean a-hole.
I will say, I've never seen The Road. I've heard that I should never watch it because it's like the most depressing movie ever.
Yep. Me and my my buddy from college, we got a bunch of Krispy Kreme donuts. And we're like, you know what? Let's just sit here and watch The Road. After we watched The Road, my buddy stood up. He looked at me and says, all right, well, I'm going to go kill myself now. And obviously, suicide is not a joke, but it's a very depressing film. Very depressing.
Yeah, I've heard things about it. I mean, The Last of Us is very popular. I mean, hell, it's getting its own TV show. I mean, the teaser trailer just came out not that long ago. Came out last week, I want to say. And, you know, this remake game for next-gen consoles is out. But I just don't think it was necessary because the graphical increase and gameplay, quote-unquote, increase isn't really that different in my eyes.
No, I didn't think so either.
Because, like, I've seen the games compared to one another back-to-back, and I don't see it. I don't see myself paying $70 for this remake unless I have never played it before.
Yeah, and I think that's mostly for the audience. It's like, hey, if you've never played this quote-unquote masterpiece, now is the perfect time to hop in.
Yeah, yeah, like that, I would say, sure, buy the remake if you've never played it. But if you've played it in the past, there's no reason to buy this game.
That's my whole thing with Witcher 3. I hear The Witcher 3 is getting remastered. And
why? Why?
Well, here's the thing. I played The Witcher 3, and I played for about an hour, and I said, okay, it's fine, it's not for me. But I think one of the reasons being is that the game, when I played it, already felt out of date. It already felt old. It didn't feel like a up-to-date game for me.
Mm-hmm.
So if they were to remaster it, and they were to improve the graphics, improve the controls just a little bit, I could see, you know what, maybe I might come back and check it out. So I understand that aspect.
I like playing old games, but there are some times where you're just like, yeah, this aspect has not aged well.
But do you expect The Witcher 3 remastered to be $70?
No, hell no.
Exactly. And that's why I'm like, if it's $39.99, all right, I'll pick it up.
Exactly. I would consider it.
I'd consider it. I'll check it out. But when I was reading one of the reviews on this about The Last of Us Remake, the person who was writing the review, they basically said, I remember this game being so much better than I remember it now. Because the story, they were like, when I was 9 years ago, this game was amazing. This game was epic. This game was everything I could ever expected. But now it's vastly different. It's just like, I don't enjoy it as I did the first time.
Interesting.
But
weird to me.
That's what they say. Don't meet your superheroes. But I'm sure you've gone back and played a game or watched a movie or a TV series that you're like, nope, this does not hold up.
Yeah, like, trying to think, a good example of a show that I actually do have one that doesn't really hold up, but I'll still watch the fuck out of it just because. Two shows come to my mind that I've rewatched recently that do not hold up, that I absolutely still love, and that's the English dub of both Yu-Gi-Oh! And Digimon.
Oh, gosh. I remember that.
They are so cringe. But I love to rewatch it just because I'm just like, this is so ridiculous. Oh, my God.
That's funny. For me, the game, there was actually a game that did not hold up. When I was young, I think my mom rented this game for me. And I went back and I tried playing it, and I'm like, man, this game is atrocious. I hate this game. It's awful. And that game was Driver 3.
Really?
Yep. When I was young, I absolutely loved the game, thought it was perfect. I ended up buying it as an adult, and I'm like, wow, this game is awful. And I'm looking at it. IGN gave it a 5.4 out of 10.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, that tracks. I could see that.
Mm. There's a while we're on the topic of like old games that don't hold up, one game that I absolutely adore and love, but unfortunately, like the gameplay elements don't hold up that well nowadays because
Leisure Suit Larry.
What's that?
Leisure Suit Larry.
No, not that. But no, that is a game that doesn't really hold up because, yeah. reasons. Anyway, but the game I'm talking about is it's a PlayStation 1 game that came out in, I want to say, 2001, if I'm not mistaken. Let me just look it up really quick. I want to say it was 2001 or 1997.
A little bit different.
I know. Ah, damn. I was off. It came out in 2000.
Okay, not that far off.
I was close, but anywho, it was a PS1 game called Legend of Dragoon. Okay. It is a JRPG role-playing game. You wouldn't like it. You would absolutely hate it because it's turn-based. But this game was made to compete with Final Fantasy, and it did fairly well, but not well enough to compete. It's regarded as like a cult classic now, but the gameplay elements in that game just don't really hold up nowadays because it's just kind of slow, you know, not quite as streamlined as the JRPGs of today, because you know, when that game came out, there wasn't all of the nice quality of life features that we have now. But yeah.
All right. Well, let's go ahead. Let's get to our final segment of our podcast, which is becoming a crowd favorite, and that is our review segment.
Woo.
Woo, review. Unfortunately, this week, because I've been so busy, I haven't really been able to give a good review on really much anything. However, Mason, I believe you have a review that you would like to talk about.
So as we mentioned in the introduction, I did end up watching the film Prey on Hulu. That is basically a prequel to the Predator movie with like Arnold Schwarzenegger and stuff. I'm not sure like where exactly it's set in the timeline of like the Predator slash Alien franchise. Like, I don't know if this movie took place prior to AVP or after AVP.
So someone told I saw online that someone said it took place 300 years before the first Aliens movie. I don't know
Okay.
I don't know what that is in AVP terms, but they said it was 300 years before the first one.
Gotcha. Okay. But that doesn't the timeline doesn't matter to me. I do like Alien films and I do like the Predator movies. I think they're very good. Good popcorn films, good monster films. And Prey, I would say, revitalized the interest within the universe. I really would, because it was a solid film. My only real complaint was that it wasn't long enough. I wanted more, you know? Like that, I was left wanting more of the movie. I wanted to see more of the characters. I wanted to, you know, learn more of the history of the Predator. Like, hey, you know, how did he get there? Why is he there by himself on his own? Like, is he blooded? Like, and for those that are like Predator fans, you know what that term means. Basically, it's when you become blooded as a Predator, you become a full-fledged hunter. So that's what that means. And typically, like those blooded hunters will be on solo missions typically. But that's a bit of lore there for you. But no, overall I thought the movie was good. I wasn't too sure about the whole like Native Americans speaking English part.
Well, how are you gonna listen to the movie?
Yeah,
I said the same
I get
thing,
it.
but
'Cause like part of me wanted it to be in the native tongue and like do subtitles, but I understand putting it in English because it's an action movie.
yeah, like I thought that same thing. I know you and I probably would have watched that if it was a Native American tongue, but a lot of people probably
Yeah.
wouldn't have.
No, I get the decision. Like, there were some things that were in Native American tongue. But overall, like, it was predominantly English with some French sprinkled in there. So I thought that that was an interesting inclusion that the filmmakers put French explorers within the movie, because during that time frame in which it's set, which is in the 1700s, the early 1700s, the French were there. You know, they were settled there in a lot of areas within North America.
Absolutely. Now,
So I did like that.
one thing I thoroughly enjoyed about Prey, and this is usually my biggest complaints about most of these type of films. Normally, I use this category for horror films, but I'll use it for this one. If I feel like I could survive in this film, I think it's a bad movie.
Yeah.
I don't think I could have survived at any part of this.
Oh, no. Hell no. Dude, I mean, I will say in terms of, like, predator ability, the one that was on display was probably fairly weak because...
But then somebody also pointed it out. They were like, this took place 300 years before we got introduced to the predator. Why can't we just assume that they're not as technologically advanced as we were 300 years ago or 300 years apart?
Mm-hmm. I mean, the predator in this film was pretty, I mean, he had some good tech.
He sure did till the end.
Yeah. I mean, I won't spoil anything, but yeah. Pretty much, the main character was able to beat him with like, crude weaponry.
And that's kind of where, and we're not going to talk, well, that was a spoiler alert.
Yeah.
But one thing that I really enjoyed about Prey was that the main character actually learned the entire film.
Which was, I thought was very cool too. Like, she was doing things that was like process of elimination. She was very intelligent, very calculating.
And that's one of the reasons why I thought the title might have been a little bit different. And obviously, we should have probably given a spoiler alert segment on some of this.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, but one of the things that I think about the title, and again, if you haven't seen it, go ahead and see it. If you don't want to hear how it's going to end, I'm not really going to explain how it ends. I'm just going to talk about a plot point. So this is your opportunity to bow out. You can come back in about 2 minutes. So one of the things that I really appreciated was the title being called Prey. And I don't think that was about the predator.
No.
I think Prey was the predator. Because at one point, she was stalking and learning from him.
Yes.
And that's how she was able to do what she did and how she was able to survive. Like,
I would agree with that.
I really appreciated that. Unfortunately, if you Google the movie Prey, the fourth story that comes up is Amber Midthunder, the actress who played the young lady, hits back at Prey critics for calling the movie woke.
What?
Yeah, because they said, a woman could never beat a predator.
That's insane to me. People are just being salty.
Yeah, I've been going through a bunch of things on social media, just checking out news posts, but I go straight to the comments. People have gotten just so negative recently.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just because a film showcases Native American culture and people doesn't mean it's woke.
Exactly. Just because it showcases other people who live on this planet,
yeah, doesn't mean
you have a problem with it.
Like, it served a crucial point to the movie. It was integral to the plot. Like, it made narrative sense. So I don't agree with people calling it woke, because there's an argument for other companies in the United States or in the world that do like the fake, you know, inclusivity stuff for diversity.
Yeah, like, every June, every company throws pride flags but doesn't hire LGBT representation.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't think that was the case with the movie Prey. Like, they legitimately like honored a lot of traditions. I thought that they were pretty respectful.
Agreed. I thought that there was a very good film to watch. I didn't even think about it, to be honest with you. I'm like, oh, cool, it's a movie. And yeah. I'm a firm believer that women can also tell stories too, everybody.
Oh, hell yeah. Women are badass.
And one last topic before we run out of time. This is a quick sidebar. Ubisoft has gone ahead and said that the next game they're going to be making, or a major, I don't know if it's a game, I think it's more of a spinoff type thing, but it's not really a DLC. The next quote-unquote game they're making will not have a female option.
Interesting. Okay, that's weird.
Which someone, like, it also said that Assassin's Creed has had a female option since Syndicate. But was there a female option in Origins?
Was there? I don't know. I didn't play it.
I don't recall there being a female option in Origins, at least to like choose to play the game.
Yeah, I mean, in most video games, they give you that option.
Yeah, but Assassin's Creed has kind of kept it up going since then.
Yeah.
So yeah, she wasn't. She was supposed to be. There was a character in Assassin's Creed Origins called Aya. She was supposed to be playable character, but the problem was they realized that men wouldn't want to play the game if they could play as a woman. So yeah. They scrapped it. Odyssey came back with Cassandra and then Valhalla, and so now they're scrapping the female option again, which sucks, but it is what it is. But we are at our time. Thank you, Mason, for joining me. This was a lot of fun. It's so good to talk to somebody.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
If you like what we do here at the Uninformed Gamers Play page, feel free to give us a like and a share on either our subscription on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or anywhere you listen to your radios. If you'd like to give us some feedback, feel free to hit me up at Twitter at Uninformed Gamers. If you wish to play with me on Xbox or PlayStation, my Xbox gamer tag is Darkness Tiger and my PlayStation gamer tag is Darkness Tiger 2. Mason, feel free to give your sign off, brother man.
I've been Mason from Rad Dreams Review on YouTube. Feel free to go to my page, drop me a couple likes, comments, subscriptions. I'll be making a couple of videos here soon, mainly about the Disney trading card game, as well as reacting to the Winnie the Pooh trailer, so y'all listening can actually see, you know, my reaction to it. I think you would appreciate that. And then the final thing I'll be doing recently will be a video on some upcoming anime that'll be on Netflix starting early September. So look forward to those videos. Make sure you go to my page and follow me. And then also make sure you follow me on Twitch, rad_dreams.
All right. We will catch you all next time. Thanks so much for joining us. Bye.
Later.